Save big on all your back-to-school needs, all in the Kroger app. Get three-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean ground beef for $3.99 a pound with your card. Then get Oreo cookies, Chips Ahoy, or Kool-Aid jammers for $1.99 each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome, everyone, to SI Media with Jimmy Traina. Thank you so much for listening. We have an outstanding episode for you this week. Kevin Harlan, the voice of the NBA on TNT, calling the Western Conference Finals between the Mavericks and Timberwolves, is our guest. Great interview with Kevin about calling the Western Conference, what's going on at TNT, his future, overall broadcasting thoughts about two-man booth, three-man booth, his call at the end of the Super Bowl when the Chiefs won. He had that call on radio, career stuff, what notes he gets from executives about his calls of games. Really great stuff. A lot of topics covered with Kevin Harlan. And then Train of Thoughts with Sal Licata will follow Kevin Harlan. And I know a lot of you like that segment, so Sal is with us this week. Before we get to it, just a quick reminder, if you missed last week's SI Media podcast, check it out. Mike North, the NFL VP of Broadcast Planning, was on to break down everything about the 2024 schedule that was released last week. Katie Nolan was on 2 weeks ago about the Tom Brady roast. John Oran a few weeks ago about sports media news. So if you missed any of those, go into the archives, check them out. Please make sure you subscribe to SI Media with Jimmy Traina. It helps tremendously. And if you can rate, review on Apple, that helps too. But the most important thing is to subscribe. All right, let's get to it. Kevin Harlan followed by Traina Thoughts all right here, right now on SI Media with Jimmy Traina. All right, joining me now, thrilled to have him on. He is a voice you'll be hearing a lot. Well, we've heard a lot the last couple of months, and we'll really hear him now almost every other night for the Western Conference Finals. He's got the call on TNT of the Timberwolves and the Mavericks. The man with the best pipes in sports, Kevin Harlan. Kevin, thanks for doing this. Appreciate it.
Jimmy, great to be on. Thank you for the invitation and your nice, kind comment. Thank you.
Well, and everyone should, everyone listening should give Kevin a thanks. He's doing this a few hours before he's got game one of Mavericks and Timberwolves. So I appreciate it. Are you, when do you leave the hotel for the arena?
We're going to walk over actually at about 5 o'clock for a 7:30 Central Time tip. So we'll get there at a little after five, meet with both coaches, do some other kind of obligatory things like with NBA.com and NBA TV and go through all of our pre-production things and get rolling. We're excited to go, especially after watching last night's Eastern Conference game one and how exciting that final was.
Yeah, for sure. So you leave at five, and is all your prep work done, or are you still doing prep work right up until the minute of tip off?
Yeah, I'm still working on notes here. Just, I set that aside as you were dialing in here to do this. We kind of work right up until tip-off, quite frankly. You're always getting some information, tweaking a note, figuring out how something maybe could be elevated in your list of priorities or taken down a notch or two if it, maybe you don't think it's as important. Trying to frame the series in a certain way. A lot of teams have got notoriety in this league. Boston, people know about them. They know about Golden State, the Lakers, the defending champion Nuggets. Not a lot of people know about the Timberwolves and maybe even Dallas, but they do know Luka Doncic. They probably have heard of Anthony Edwards, and so we're going to build stories around those two players and extend them to these two very, very good teams.
Did you do any prep for the Nuggets at all, or do you wait until the series is over to start prep?
I kind of wait until we get to the doorstep of that series. We just finished the Timberwolves and Nuggets. Before that, we did the Nuggets and Lakers. Right. So those are our two primary early round series. And, you know, the great thing about the playoffs, Jimmy, as you know, is that every game is different than the other. They've all got their own personality. And kind of just adding to the story, it's like you're writing a book, right? You begin with, here we got the number two seed Nuggets, the defending champions, against the number three seed Minnesota Timberwolves. You kind of lay out your headline, what would be on the marquee outside the building, so to speak, and that's what we do with our broadcast. And then as we go through the series, we had seven games, and the Denver Minnesota series, each of those games was like a chapter in a book. And you kind of referred to each of those games as you continue on that journey. So it really kind of makes a very nice, neat package. We didn't know Dallas, of course, was going to win until they beat Oklahoma City. And so I knew the Timberwolves story going in, but thought about how I would frame it if they went against Dallas, what I would do if they faced the Thunder. And then when Dallas won, my mind quickly shifted to Doncic and Kyrie and the Mavericks and began to, in my mind at least, kind of formulate some things. Then everybody on our crew is working toward those same goals. Stan Van Gundy comes up with a long list of things he's watched and noticed on tape. Reggie Miller gives us his thoughts. Our producer, our director, and all the people that are part of the staff. Turner has a lot of people in Minneapolis and soon to be in Dallas with games 3 and 4. And we all enjoy kind of the collaborative momentum that a series brings, and everybody kind of feeds the beast. And at the end of the day, you get what you think is a pretty good way to approach it, and then let the game speak for itself.
I'm glad you mentioned Reggie and Stan Van Gundy. You work with Reggie all year. I know Jamal Crawford was brought in during the playoffs for a three-person booth. Now Stan Van Gundy gets brought in for the Western Conference Finals. As the play-by-play guy, how do you feel about sort of the mixing and matching and three-person versus two and rotating that third person? Is it like no big deal, or you wish there was more stability?
No, you know what? I just kind of think I think the job of a play-by-play guy is to just adapt to whatever is in front of him. And Turner, like ESPN and ABC, they have a three-person booth, and that's what we have. And when that came down the line that we were going to do that for the first and second round, first of all, Jamal is a personal friend and a terrific emerging broadcaster. And I just can't tell you how much fun I had with him and Reg over the last handful of weeks in the first two rounds of the playoffs. But you bring it back a little bit. I think what you do probably more than anything is try to figure out per play, you know, where your segment has got to fit. And I guess as a play-by-play guy, I'm taking the last 5-6 seconds of a possession, trying to wrap it up quickly and let those guys comment, each get their words in that they think are important about that play that just happened. Quite frankly, we do a three-man booth in the tournament, too, in the NCAA tournament. College basketball is a lot easier for a three-man because longer play clock, shot clock, slower game, less talented players because, you know, they're just at that stage, and there's a lot of missed shots, and there's a lot of – it's a more physical game. It's just a different kind of game to call, but it's a slower game. And so there's a lot of breath there. It really has a very nice cadence to it. The NBA is a race, and trying to find where your spot is in that broadcast is hard with a two-man booth, and even with a three-person booth, it becomes more complicated. So something I've done for my whole career and enjoy the challenge and love the people I work with. And so, but just a little bit of altering, a little bit of editing probably is what's required from a play-by-play standpoint.
I never made that connection, the difference between college and NBA. It's amazing because everything you said there makes total sense. So that where three man works better. Yeah,
it does. It's just easier. There's a better rhythm to it. I work with Dan Bonner at CBS and Stan Van Gundy, who comes over, and we have a three-person booth, and really the game itself. I use the word, the term less talented. That's the wrong term to use. In the NBA, we've got the best players in the world, right? And the college kids, they're just not at that skill level, but
right,
the emotion and the passion and how hard they play and how physical they play is such a nice change of pace from the NBA. It's just a different game.
Yeah.
And from a broadcast standpoint, there's just more space, better cadence probably, and just a little bit more comfortable probably. Basketball, really, you could just do almost a radio broadcast in the NBA because it's so fast, so quick, a lot of scoring, and that makes it just a little bit more of a challenge.
Do you, as someone who's done this for so long, do you sort of observe – and take notes on other situations. Like, I'm thinking of like what you would think about how ESPN, obviously they made a big change. They got rid of Jeff Van Gundy and Mark Jackson. They bring in Doc Rivers and Doris Burke. Doc Rivers leaves. Now it's JJ Redick. Do you think, like, do you put yourself in the Mike Breen shoes there? Do you watch him and think, oh, you know, I see the differences when he worked with those guys. Like, are you in evaluating mode when you watch those telecasts?
You know, I'm not, although Mike and I talk all the time, we text a lot. In fact, just this morning, about all the different things going on in the league or with the broadcast or whatever. And we have talked about the three-person booth. I think he kind of feels the way I do. I think a purist would probably say that, you know, he and Clyde, you know, it's such a comfortable fit with the Knicks and MSG that he's probably used to that. But ESPN, if I'm not mistaken, for the most part, will use just a two-man crew, two-person crew a lot of the year. And then, you know, come the bigger games, finals, conference finals, they'll go to a three-person booth. Now, here's the difference. Mike is in the Hall of Fame. Doris Burke is in the Hall of Fame. You know, you've got accomplished broadcasters there. Stan is in his second, third, fourth year with Turner. And Reggie, of course, has been for well over a decade. And so not that there's a difference there, but I think what I'm saying is all parties know exactly what is going on. Stan has a good feel for it. Reggie clearly does. And certainly Doris and JJ is probably learning a little bit,
right,
I'm guessing,
right,
although he's incredibly bright. So it's a very short and very small curve for him. But no, you know, I think it's nice to hear a lot of different diverse comments and different ways people may view a play or a game. And I don't know if the fans like it. It's just what management wants, and we do what management wants. So that's what we're doing. Yeah. But I personally, I have no problem either way, quite frankly.
I wouldn't speak for all fans, but I think most fans miss Jeff Van Gundy. We miss the guy who would call out the refs because he was pretty much the only one who would do it. And
well, they got Stan much, over. Stan's not far away from that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's
There was a
Knicks Sixers game where Stan killed the refs. Well, I forgot the circumstances. It was very controversial at the end of the game, and Stan said something about the refs, and I spoke to Jeff about trying to get him on this podcast, and I said, you know, what do you think of what your brother said? He said what I would have said. So the Van Gundys can't help it, I think.
Well, on the tournament, there was a game that Stan really went into an official and said basically the words that just came out of your mouth. That was a terrible call. How can they make that call? I cannot disagree more with that call. It was a statement that he made, and I was going, whoa, whoa. That's pretty good. You know, during the tournament, it's a little different just because, you know, it is college, and although now the difference between the two with NIL is basically non-existent. But I don't know. I guess everybody's got their lane they're staying in. That's just a lane that I'm not going to go in. If they're going to say it, they're going to say it. But it is funny when they come out and they're so blatant in some kind of comment like that.
Yeah, because it's like sort of the voice of the fan in a way.
Right, sure it is. Of course.
You mentioned Breen doing the games with Walt Clyde Frazier. That's obviously locally here in New York where I am on MSG. You started out locally as the voice of the Minnesota Timberwolves. You were their first play-by-play guy, and now here the Timberwolves are in the Western Conference Finals, which you'll call. Do you even have to think about, oh, people might think there's sort of a bias or a rooting here? I know that the only thing announcers want are close games and seven game series. They don't really care who wins, but you were the original voice of the Timberwolves. Do you have to like go out of your way to make sure that, you know, the Maverick fan doesn't think, uh-oh, we've got a guy from Minnesota here calling this game. What's going on?
No, and I hope Pacer fans don't think that about Mike either. You know, when they were doing that Nick Pacer series,
right?
I would like to think that everyone would feel at this level that we're all pretty neutral. And you said it perfectly. We care for good games, great performances. We do not care who wins. I grew up in Green Bay, My dad was with the Packers for 37 years. I've done many Packer games over the years on Fox and certainly at CBS and Westwood One, including a Super Bowl. And I don't think anyone could have known that I was a Packer fan during that time either. So I don't think that really comes through. Now, listen, is it fun to be in Minnesota and see the city react? Absolutely. Just as it would be in any city. When we're in Denver, last year on their march, when they were going to a championship in the NBA, fans were excited. You get caught up in the excitement of the building. But I don't think it gets into the broadcast. You know, one of the weirdest things about doing these games is when I go back and watch and I hear all the PA announcements and all the music that's being played during a game. I don't know how other guys are. I'm assuming they're like I am. You're so lost in the game. You're in the weeds so deeply that you really don't know things like noise or I mean, you may feel the crowd, but you block everything off and you're just really concentrating on what's going on in the game. So to sit there and think that, boy, I can't wait, boy, if Edwards hits this shot or if Jokic hits this shot, or that never really crosses my mind. I don't think that way. I just kind of let the game hopefully get inside my head and heart. And then what comes out, comes out. So, I would hope no one would ever feel that I'm favoring either team.
All right. Even though you're neutral, since you are from, you worked with the Timberwolves, give me a little feel like Minnesota getting to an NBA final, what that would mean to that city. Are they super amped up? Are they hungry and thirsty to get to an NBA finals more than, a regular fan base?
Well, yeah, they've never been there, clearly. It's 35 right. years they've been in existence. There are some arguments that would say that this has been, one of the least successful teams in the history of pro basketball. And, there were some lean early years. And after Kevin Garnett left, there were some more. So now they finally have this kind of ray of hope with this Anthony Edwards, this 22-year-old kid, and Karl Anthony Towns, and a terrific bench, and Rudy Gobert, and on and on. And I think they really feel like this – is going to be, one of their best shots at breaking that narrative of them being one of the worst teams. So I think I was in Kansas City back 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago when they made a couple World Series and eventually won one in Major League Baseball, and that city went bananas. And Kansas City's a football city. Kansas City's an NFL city for clear reasons. But when the Royals were winning, that city exploded. That stadium on TV looked great. So I imagine the same thing here will be at the Target Center, and same thing down in Dallas, a chance for the Mavericks to send one of their hometown teams to the NBA Finals and the premier player, Luka Doncic. There's a lot to cheer for. So you get to this stage. Denver was great. Denver was phenomenal.
Yeah.
And trying to defend a title. So I love the atmosphere of these games. It's the best time of the year for sure.
Minnesota does seem like the darlings out of the four teams left. I think that's the team that the NBA fan who doesn't have any dog in the fight is sort of pulling for. That's the vibe I get.
Perhaps, maybe a little bit, just something new and different, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And, we're looking for that next star. I don't know if that next star really is on the horizon. We've got, and especially an American-born star. We've got a lot of European kids that are making Wembanyama, Antetokounmpo, Doncic. I mean, go right on down the line. All these great, European players are coming in and taking the league by storm. And we don't have as many American players, American-born players, that are doing that. So that has been a narrative. Here is a 22-year-old kid who's got the skill of some of the greats that we've seen. Can he possibly, get to that level? I think John Morant was on that road. Mm. And then the team kind of faltered, and then he had some issues. Anthony Edwards may have taken that role, and he may be in that seat right now. And so I think a lot of eyes are on him, quite frankly, to see how he does.
For sure. I want to ask you some general questions about your career overall, but I know everyone listening to this is waiting for me to ask you about the future here with TNT. And I know you don't know anything about it, and you're working for TNT right now. I guess the one thing I know people would want to know, and I'd want to know is, Charles has already said – that if TNT lost the NBA, he's got it in his contract that he's a free agent and he can go somewhere else if he wanted to. I think Ernie's come out and said he's staying at Turner. You know, if Turner lost the NBA, unfortunately, that's what it's looking like here, which is hard to believe. You know, I don't know if CBS would let you go to NBC or something like that and do a joint deal. Amazon may be a little different. Can you give us any information, shed any light on what you potentially could do if it, Turner does lose the NBA? Because no one wants to lose you as a voice of the NBA.
Well, you're nice to say that. I've been with Turner for 28 years. I started in 96. We've had a lot of different ownership changes, but we've had the NBA that whole time. Turner runs NBA.com. Turner Broadcasting also controls NBA TV. There's a lot of investment that company has made in the NBA. They've had them since the mid-80s as a network. So clearly, there's a lot on the line here. There's nothing I can do. And so I guess my immediate feel is that I want to do the best job I can possibly do right now. I control the things I can control, and that's my performance. And doing the best I can do for these next, you know, how many games we've got left in this series. But, you know, I started doing that. The NBA was my first job out of college. The day I graduated, I got a call from the Kansas City Kings to be their radio voice and TV voice when I was 21. So that was my first job, the NBA. And I've grown to love it. I admire it more than I can even put into words. It's been a part of the fabric of my family. And, but if the worst would happen and they would leave and go someplace else and there wouldn't be an opportunity for me down the road, I would leave grateful beyond measure that I've been lucky enough to do these games all these years, called Michael Jordan's fourth ever NBA game from that point on, called Kobe Bryant his rookie season through his career, called LeBron James's first NBA game in Sacramento, and through his career, which continues to this day. I've been blessed in so many ways, and one of them is to be a part of this league and a part of Turner. So I, as with everything in my life, Jimmy, I trust God, and just what happens, happens, but do the best job that I can that's in front of me that day.
All right. I don't want to push it. I mean, I can push it. I won't push it. I guess this is what I would ask, because you can't say this. I can say this. If Turner loses the NBA, NBC and or Amazon, one or both will absolutely make you an offer. And I just, I know people want to know you'd be able to do that in terms of, like, I don't know what, obviously you do at the NFL and college basketball for CBS. So I don't know how that factors into the NBA situation. That's really, I guess, what has us nervous as Kevin Harlan fans.
Well, thank you for that. I CBS is I can't imagine working at a better place than CBS. There has been, you know, people that have moved outside. They've let me to Turner. I've had a chance to work for both and Westwood One. So, you know, I don't know what's ahead. And quite frankly, you know, even if this all happens in the way that personally I rather not see, we still have next year to broadcast.
Right,
Turner still
right.
has the rights for next year. So I would have one more year and you know, so much. Listen, you cover this business as much as anybody and know it as well from tip to tail. This business changes literally every day. Every day something is just like, you cannot believe what you're reading. You cannot believe this deal or that deal or this move or that, whatever. And so I guess to sit here and worry about something that I have no control over until we know what the what the final thing is wasted energy. And when we know, I'll talk with my wife of 37 years who's been with me on this journey, and we'll figure out what might be the best thing for our family. And, you know, I still have two very good employers at CBS and Westwood that I love working for and doing the NFL and still get a little college basketball in. But I'd be lying if I said that the NBA didn't have a very special place in my heart. And I hope in some form or fashion that I continue with Turner. And if not with Turner, I mean, we'll let the fates guide me, I guess.
I hate the way it's all come down for you guys at Turner, just in terms of like, it does seem like news just, you know, leaks here and there, and there's still no definitive word, and it's dragging out. And you know, I mean, that's just, it's horrible for everyone who works there. So hopefully,
And Jimmy, you know, again, you know the business as well as anybody. It's not just the people that you hear and see, but it's all these other people that have got their lives intertwined with the broadcast and with the NBA and Turner's presentation and all the things they do. Everybody works as hard as any of us that you see and hear. Yeah. And those are the people that I feel a lot for. Now, listen, Turner still has Major League Baseball. They still have the NHL. They've got a lot of different things going. They do these golf specials every once in a while.
Still have the tournament.
Yeah, and they have the NCAA tournament. But at the same time, the NBA is a kind of a core thing, right? It's it's kind of the heart and soul of the division. Excuse me. I got a cold. Excuse me. But it really is. It really is a I do get kind of choked up talking about these people I work. We just had a production meeting about an hour ago, and I look around the room and see these people that work so hard and we're all, you know, feeling, you know, it's an uncomfortable feeling, but
I think about them.
They have families to feed. So it's tough. I mean, it's the business. Yep. It is what it is. It is what it is.
Yep. Yep. All right. Let me move on from that. Let me ask some general overall questions. Give me, you had a viral moment in the playoffs with Jamal Murray after he hit a half court shot. Give me your perspective of that moment, what was going through your head and your reaction to that.
Well, you know, he fell right into our laps, right? I mean, he was right there. And as he was drifting toward us, the ball was still in flight and on its downward path to the rim. And he felt it was good. And his team was beginning to empty the bench and come over and congratulate him. They knew, I think, that it was going to be, have a pretty good chance of going in. And he was right there. And so it's a big moment, and actually had a very interesting portion, that little 20 seconds of where this series could have gone. Denver kind of swung the series during that time. It eventually didn't turn out the way they wanted, but that was a very important 20 seconds. And he was right there, and he's looking right at us. And so that's when but I would have said it if he was over in the corner at the other end of the floor, you know, that he got it. He got that shot, you know, whatever I said. And so the fact that he could hear me was kind of fun, but you clearly don't plan for that. You just let it kind of happen. One time when I was doing the Timberwolves, Charles Barkley was inbounding a ball right by our broadcast position, and it was quiet and it was a blowout game, but he was still, and he was getting ready to get handed the ball by the official, but he was right there. Like, I could have gone out and grabbed his jersey. And I thought, you know, I had a little bit of fun here with Charles because it was quiet for, you know, we're getting blown out. And I said, I don't care what anybody says about Charles Barkley. He's a good looking man and he doesn't have a weight problem. And he got the ball and he all of a sudden started chuckling like this and he couldn't get down. He looks back. Who is that idiot back there saying that? And, so you have fun with these guys. And that's kind of the great thing about being courtside is that you're so close to them. You know, you can go out and literally grab their jersey if you had to. And those moments are kind of fun and lighthearted. But the one that with Murray, not planned that was just reactionary and just the heat of the moment. And that was my call and that was his reaction.
Since you mentioned being courtside and you can pick up everything, who have been the best trash talkers over the year? Who's the biggest talkers over the years that when you get their game, you're thinking, okay, I got to make sure I listen because this guy's always yapping?
Well, Kevin Garnett was pretty good in his day. Kobe was terrific. But not in mean, bad, like cussing ways, more like Kobe in particular, like he's just like, hey, I don't know how you're going to stop me tonight. You can hear some of these conversations as they're going back with the defender the other way after Kobe would hit a shot or whatever. And sometimes you see that, but a lot of times, you know, that's the thing about the NFL. There's so much talking. People are now they got them mic'd up, so I guess you get an indication of what it's like. There's so much talking on it, but you can't see it because of the face mask and everything else, and they're so far away and they're, you know. But in the NBA, you can kind of read lips. You can kind of hear sometimes as they go by, and that's kind of the fun part of the game. But no different than, and a lot of them they're all good friends to one degree or another. So it's all in fun and just the competition of the moment.
Yep. You mentioned you work with Westwood One. You obviously, Kevin does the NFL, calls a Super Bowl every year. How many Super Bowls have you done now for Westwood?
14 straight, wow. Actually. Yes, yeah.
And then this year, we talked about it earlier, that all you guys want are good games, close games. You get sort of the dream. You have an overtime game in Super Bowl, and I despise the term, but I'll use it here for lack of a better term. It was a walk-off for the Chiefs.
Yeah.
When you make that call on the Mahomes touchdown pass to Hardman, do you evaluate it afterward? Do you listen to it afterward? Or it's done and it's out of sight, out of mind?
Oh, no. I definitely had to go back and listen to that. We played it in the post-game show, and that's the first time I had heard it. And I really wasn't sure, so I had the engineer, I said, send me a copy of that so I can just put it on my phone. And so when you get in a moment like that, you're thinking, technically sound, stick with the things that, you know, things that you normally do. Down and distance, who's in, where's the quarterback, you know, what's the defense like, you know, things you can fit in without getting too much, because if you get too much, you're going to lose. And it was a bang, bang play, right? It was, he got the snap, he quickly goes, throws a short, and it's a short pass. It's not a longer pass where you can kind of build up the drama of the pass. It's like, he's right there, throws a dart, and it's in, and the guy's open. And so I said, I have this whole grading process I use for radio play-by-play, which is a thing I've developed over the many years I've done it. But as I went back and listened, I got the sheet out. Did I do this? Yeah, check that box. And, we could all, and I'm echoing the words of Al Michaels here, we could all go back, listen and watch and change 1,000 things in a broadcast that we'd say or do differently. And whether it's add something, lay out, not add something, whatever it might be. And so like with any broadcast, I come away feeling the same way that, you know, could I have added one more thing? I don't know. And how quickly that play happened and what it meant. And then how I had to quickly get into what, you know, the outcome was. If I could have added much more, maybe I would have said, quite for a radio audience, a crouching catch and a back pedal alone on the side of the end zone. But then, you know, you're getting pretty lengthy and people want to go, did he catch it or not? Is it a touchdown or not? So you had to kind of quickly get that in there. But that's how I look at things. I listen differently than probably a fan does. I say, can I, you know, I'm one of the, if I'm driving along, in my mind's eye, have I used the right words to describe the exact kind of play that just happened, the kind of catch, the kind of run, the kind of throw, whatever it is. And I was okay with the call. Let's put it that way. Okay. I was okay with the call.
Okay. Fair. Do you have one call that sticks out that you regret? You've done a lot of games.
Yeah, too many games, probably. Yeah.
But is there one that has stuck with you that you regret? If not, that's great.
Well, here's an example. When Jamal Murray hit that jump shot the other day to beat the Lakers, mm-hmm. he was fading away. He had two good shots. One was at the buzzer, right? It was earlier in the series. And he hit the shot.
Wait, the Lakers?
Nuggets beat the Lakers, and Jamal Murray, outside the lane, fade away to win it at the buzzer and beat the Lakers. And we had set up the play well, no timeouts, you know, all those things were in place. And I don't know why I didn't do it. I guess because I wanted to make it more simple, but I could sit and rationalize anything. But he was defended by Anthony Davis on the play. And I called him being defended by Davis earlier in that sequence. So it was there. We could see it, of course. But I'm kind of big on always mentioning the defender. I just feel like coaches are constantly talking about it, so I always mention it. And I'm not sure why I didn't mention, you know, over the reach of Anthony Davis. I just said Murray moves, and then he hit. And you could see he hit the shot. Clock hit zero. Buzzer sound. Team, you know, envelops him, and there we go. So they're small things, and like 99 times out of 100. I would have said the defendant. And I don't know why I didn't say the defendant. Now, I watched Mike last night, and he had the shot by Jaylen Brown. But he didn't say the defender either. So, you know, I mean, you go about it different ways. I don't know that the fans really care about it. I think what you've got – at the end of the day, you've got to answer to yourself and say, and what I think is right, Did I make the right call? Did I handle it the right way? And there are times I'll get to the room after a game in my hotel room and go, you should have done more. Or, you know what, for what it was at that moment, you're okay. I never give my the problem with this business is the moments of patting yourself on the back are never as high as the lows are when you've messed up. Right. And those lows stay with you, and they just do not go away, and sometimes for days. And when you do have a great call, it never reaches the height of the lows reaching their low.
Your calls get pretty good height on Twitter, so that's at least you can take stock in that. People well, love
I don't look
your
at
calls.
Twitter. I think I've told you, Vern Lundquist said one time, don't look at it. I don't look. My daughters will look sometime if there's something that they think I need to see, which is rarely, and I can't even think of the last time they mentioned anything, but I'm sure
you got wind of the Jamal Murray thing.
Well, that only because I guess an artist in LA, the only reason why I got this, that I even noticed it, some artist in LA did a drawing of it and sent it out, and someone from the Nuggets had sent it to me.
Wow.
I said, oh my gosh. And then I sent it to my wife, and she goes, "Yeah, dope. Here's what it looked like." And then she sent me the picture. She screenshot a picture and showed me that. But otherwise, that was that.
You have a very distinct style, and I'll wrap up because I know you got to get moving. I'm just curious, you mentioned right before this the phrase "the problem with the business," so it led me into this question sort of because I wanted it. Have you ever had, you've worked so many sports, so many networks. Have you ever had an executive try to change you and change your style?
No. I think when I first got to Fox after leaving the Kansas City Chiefs radio booth that I had done for 9 years on their network, Ed Gorin hired me at Fox with David Hill. And I worked there 4 years before I went on to CBS. And Ed would, in a playful, kind, and thoughtful way to a younger broadcaster, say, you know, sometimes, you can bring it back a little bit if you want to. And that really is the only one. Mike Pearl hired me at TNT back in 96. And I remember distinctly, and John Wildhack, I talked at ESPN when I did games at ESPN. I asked them both, point blank, hey, do I have too much juice here? And both had said no. And Ed is really the only one that had, and it really wasn't even a suggestion. It was just more of we were talking about a variety thing. I was out to dinner with he and his wife, actually. And he said, you know, just you've got plenty. And when you're going to deliver, you can deliver it, but bring it back and, mm-hmm. And I think about that conversation a lot. But no, I really Howard Dinneroff was my boss at Westwood One for a long time. He's now left, and I'd ask him. I said, and now he said, no, that's. He said, so many guys are sounding alike these days. It's nice to have perhaps a different way. But you know, I know I've got to be judicious, and so I think about that quite. But no, I really haven't gotten that. It's. I'd like some, you know, sometimes people like at CBS, they'll give us about every 3 or 4 weeks, we'll have a conference call with our bosses there, and they'll say, here's what we liked, here's what we didn't like. And they'll give us maybe like in a particular play or whatever sequence, but nothing more far reaching.
I'm fascinated, and I hope you could pry. I can pry on that. I would love to know when they tell you something they didn't like, what's an example of that?
Well, like for instance, it's generally this kind
of
point.
Yeah. I don't need a specific. Yeah.
They'll say, you know, hey, when there was this play X, that may have been a good time to set your analyst up on asking, well, should they go for it on fourth down? Should they use a timeout? You know, maybe be ahead of the play, be proactive, think a little bit ahead. You know, that's an example of something that they would say. You know, CBS is terrific about, and if they hear something, they're going to say it, I know. So, no, I welcome, I take notes when they say stuff, and I look at them a lot when they you know, in our seminar, they'll give us a general thing. Here's what we want from our play-by-play people. And, you know, they've got 8, 9 of us in the room, and they'll say, we need you to, you know, continue to forward the story. Make sure you're constantly looking at substitutions or things like that. And so I mark all those things down. So there's always kind of a list of things that they may throw out at us. But individually, I can't necessarily say there have been specific things that they've right. come out and said, hey, this has got to change or you're gone.
Since you mentioned the NFL, in doing a little bit of research for this, I came across something where you had called your 500th game last season for CBS. They did a nice little tribute. And they had an image of you with Joe Namath in the booth.
Yes.
Who did you do? What network? What was that for? I was just, when I saw that.
It was NBC. It was, backpedal a little bit. That spring, Marv Albert was stuck in Washington, D.C., could not make an NBA game. And NBC called me Saturday night at my home in Kansas City. I'm on the floor playing with our little girls who were just a couple of years old at the time. And they said, Marv Albert is stuck in a snowstorm, cannot get out of Washington. We've got a game tomorrow with Jordan and the Bulls in Detroit. Can you go there to join Mike Fratello and Ahmad Rashad? And I said, yes, I can. First of all, I didn't believe him. I thought it was a prank. I think it was Ebersol. They got this point. I get on a plane. I fly to Detroit. We meet with Phil Jackson and the Bulls at midnight at the hotel in Detroit. Wake up the next morning. Go do the game with Mike Fratello, taking Marv Albert's spot. It's Jordan against the Bad Boys. It's an incredible game, right?
Right.
Fly home. Don't think much of it. That summer, they call and they say, we've got a couple of games that we have because of conflicts. Can you come in and do the first and second week of the NFL season? And I said, yes, let me ask my boss, Carl Peterson with the Chiefs. And he gave me the go ahead. So the game that you saw was with Joe Namath. And I remember being at the seminar and here I am 29 or whatever I was. We go to dinner one night at the seminar and Don Cricky buys dinner and I'm sitting next to Dick Enberg and here's O.J. Simpson the NBC NFL.
Probably Costas at that point.
Unbelievable. I'm just, my mouth is just wide open, right? Went to Rosie O'Grady's where we went for dinner.
Oh, yeah.
I remember people always ask me, do you have an O.J. story? Yeah, I got an O.J. story. During the seminar, I had to go to the bathroom so bad. I ran in there and I'm in the bathroom. And who comes right up next to me but O.J. Simpson? And we had this talk. He goes, my eyes were swimming around. Man, I had to go to the bathroom so bad. And I said, me too, Juice, me too. That's all I could say to him. That was it. So I did the NBA game, and then that led to doing that game for NBC.
Perfect way to end it.
And then that led to doing ESPN, which led to Fox. So everything had a place, and I'm forever grateful to those opportunities.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Well, I appreciate you coming up. Now, when the Western Conference Finals wraps up, you get a little time off till NFL?
Yeah,
good.
I'm in the middle of taping the 2K NBA video game right now. So we're doing NBA 2K25, and I'm doing that, and I'll do that. We go up to Wisconsin from Green Bay, and we have a small cottage up on Lake Michigan. We spend our summers up there, and so I'll be up there recording. And I'll get some time off and then I'll do the Packers preseason as I've done since 2003 for their TV network beginning in August.
I had fun with Ian Eagle on this podcast because I had gone on a rant on a podcast before Ian was on saying, Ian's still doing the Jets preseason. Kevin Harlan still does the Packers preseason. What are these guys doing this for? Don't they want to enjoy their summers? These, you know, like you and Ian are thought of as like top play-by-play guys in your field. You don't need the practice. Enjoy the summer. And Ian got a kick out of it. He texted me, laughed about it. And I said, these guys, here they are. They're doing the local broadcast, not even national, of these preseason games. It's wild.
Oh, they're vital. First of all, I was a ball boy for the Packers. So it's kind of the family business.
Right.
But listen, after not doing anything for 2 months, you got to get your voice in shape. It's no different than any other athlete has to get in shape themselves. And just getting back to the pacing of the NFL, I find those games invaluable to getting my reps so that when I hit week one for CBS, I hit the ground running. I'm all
great
about
to know.
Even at my age, I keep thinking, how can I get better? How can I evolve? How can I get better? I always think, can I, like tonight, how can I get better than my game seven the other night in Denver? So I constantly think that way.
You know, I've asked more than a handful of guys to come on the pod, and I've been told, you know, I can't do it that day because I have a game in my voice, and you know, I can't do it that week because I got two games. We can do it another week. Now you're doing the podcast. You just told me you're working on the NBA video game, and then you have a game tonight. Your voice just, that's it. It's that strong. It never
gets... game seven. I was at about a seven, about a six. Oh, okay. Had a horrible cold. I woke up the morning of the Nuggets Timberwolves game seven, and my wife called to go, oh my gosh, I could not, I was done. So I spent a lot of the day in the shower with it turned up as hot as it could go, breathing hot air, drank a lot of water as I always do. And somehow by the grace of God, I got it back and was, but I was not full voice for that game. Right. Slowly it has come back here and I think I'm ready for tonight, but yeah, and I don't know if it's allergies. I think it is. Or we got four grandchildren. I may have gotten something from one of the kids. I don't know. Yeah. But it, I don't know what it is. But that has not happened to me a lot. But when it does, it hits, and I panicked. I was all day long. I was very worried, and I sat down in that game seven,
right. That's what you live for
all year long for game sevens, and it turned out to be a historic game because it came back from 20 down to win. The Timberwolves did. So, you know, there are some of those calls they listen back to in my regular voice that could have really punched it home. But I just couldn't that night. I did what I could do. And there are nights that you have to do that. You just got to, you know, just do the best you can do. Like, you know, if a player's injured.
I don't think anyone noticed, but I'm glad you'll be a full throat, as Al Michaels likes to say.
I think I will be a full throat. Yes, Michaels. That's right.
It's a great Al line. I can't tell you. Yeah, I can't tell you how much I appreciate you doing this on a few hours before a game. So thank you and enjoy the Timberwolves and Mavericks. I appreciate it, and hopefully everything works out.
Thank you, Jimmy. Thanks. I'm a regular listener, and I'm a fan, so I
appreciate it.
I appreciate your invitation. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you, Kevin. Take care. All right, joining me now, as he does every week from WFAN Radio in New York, SNY TV in New York, my buddy Sal Licata for our Train of Thoughts segment. Sal, how are you?
Great. Looking forward to this as usual.
I am not great.
Why? What happened?
You'll love this.
Oh, boy.
So on Monday night, I bet my first WNBA game.
Okay.
And it did not go well.
What was Caitlin Clark playing?
Yeah. This is what, it's not my fault. I'm blaming. Let me tell you what happened. Late in the afternoon, like, I don't know, 5-6 o'clock, maybe early, I start getting bombarded in my group texts with my degenerate friends telling me the Caitlin Clark wagers, who's betting over points. And I'm like, I'm not doing this. Like, I'm not, there's no, because then if I bet it, I have to watch it and I don't want to watch it. So I'm like, I'm not doing this. But then the FOMO kicked in. And I'm like, if these motherfuckers win and I don't do it, I'm like, you know. So I'm like,
oh,
all right,
man.
So I bet over her points, and I bet over, I think it was 3.5 three-pointers. Then I forget the game started because I'm not, the right. WNBA is not in my world. So I forget it's on. I'm scrolling through Twitter, and I see she basically sprained her ankle and had to leave for basically the entire second quarter.
Oh!
So... that is a one and done.
I was
with Caitlin Clark.
I don't know much about it, but I was going to say, how would she not get over 3.5 threes? Like, that seems a no brainer to me.
She had three, of course.
Oh, and she left when in the game, in the second quarter?
Like, she missed basically the entire second quarter.
Oh man, that's brutal.
So that'll be one and done.
Yeah.
Now, the reason why I didn't want to have to pay attention, I didn't want to bet it because then I would want to pay attention. I didn't want to pay attention because I was watching, Peacock came out with this series, The Bronx Zoo, about the 90 Yankees. Have you watched any of this?
I did. I didn't finish it yet, but I cannot wait. Matter of fact, I'll probably finish it. It's three episodes, right?
Three episodes, 45 minutes each.
Yeah.
Very easy viewing.
Yeah, I can't wait. I saw the first, I'd say, 15, 20 minutes so far, then I fell asleep, and I haven't gotten back to it yet, but it's high on my list.
Okay.
So, I actually ordered Peacock for it, so.
Oh, my God. Yeah. It's not that good.
Oh, it's the 90s Yankees. I can't get enough of that stuff. I want it.
I said on Twitter, I thought it was good. I did not think it was great.
Okay.
I had three major issues. Now, listen, if you're a Yankee fan, you have to watch this. It's a or maybe even just a New Yorker. It's a very, very fun trip down memory lane. I'm not sure if you're not a Yankee fan or if you're not a New Yorker, how much you'll, I don't know if someone in Chicago cares about Andy Hawkins or Kevin Moss. If you're in New York, it's a very fun watch. But these are my three major problems, and I'll try to do it without major spoilers. I mean, one, I don't need to hear from Rosanna Scotto as a Yankee expert. Okay, you have Joel Sherman, you have Buck Showalter, you have Susan Waldman, you have Michael Kay. Rosanna Scotto is telling me what the 90 Yankees were like. That bothered me. I don't get what anyone says.
Didn't we eat at one of our restaurants once?
We did. It was good.
Yeah.
Very good. I don't. Right. But can you have some? Can you be a Yankee reporter if you're going to talk about the Yankees? They had a great lineup of those people I just mentioned. Then you shoehorn someone in.
I find that sometimes even the WWE stuff, and not just on like their network, right, but on like, you know, whatever, A&E, like I do find sometimes with these documentaries, it happens with the NFL, like they get random people who there's just no need for it.
It's probably what people were saying about me when I was on the Inside the NBA documentary on TNT. Who's this guy? So that was one problem. The second problem was I thought they glossed over a lot of things without going in depth. I thought it was very surface. I would have liked more in depth on some of the things they covered.
Like, which, give me an example.
Okay. Did you get to the part where they had Billy Martin hired right after they hired Bucky Dent and Billy was going to take over and then died in a car crash?
I think I did, yeah.
They didn't give me, like, that was like a here and there, like, bing, they didn't really, I still don't have a clear understanding of the George Steinbrenner, Dave Winfield. Like, they said Winfield's contract was for more than George thought because of a cost of living increase. That's the only reason this turned into a blood feud. And they kept saying, like, they kept going, oh, they had a war of words. They had a war of words. Show me, remind me what I wanted to know who said what.
Let me tell you something. I don't know if you know this. There's a book out.
Yeah.
Andy Martino wrote a book called The Yankee Way. And it's fresh in my mind because I just read it last night. It's actually why I put the 90s Yankee thing on hold. And we had him in studio today. He gives the details on that. So, like, I don't know if I feel like
you're,
I
got a better
understanding because of the book or because of what I watched. I was getting confused. I think it's in the book, though. And with Winfield specifically, there was a clause, I guess, where George had to donate to his charity, and that pissed George off. And by the way, you have to read this book because, like, I can't even believe how abusive George Steinbrenner was to work for. I can't even believe some of the stories.
Right.
You'll love the book. Anyway, it's on top of that. So, yeah.
Yeah, I'll have to read that. That'll be my beach book for the summer now when it starts to get hot. I know George called Winfield Mr. May, but they don't really get it. What else was said? All they kept talking about was like the back and forth, but they didn't tell me anything. And this was my single biggest problem with the documentary or the series, whatever you want to call it. Now, this is going to be a bit of a spoiler. So it's going to be a spoiler. And I'll just, okay. Mel Hall. Now, I understand that this series is about the 90 Yankees, and the focus is going to be on the Yankee players and Mel Hall. And the doc does a good job of explaining how Mel Hall had a 15-year-old girlfriend, brought her to the prom, took the picture of Mel Hall, who was a New York Yankee player at the time, takes a 15-year-old girl to the prom, and it was in the Yankee yearbook at the end of the year.
Oh,
I mean, God. You can't even... But this was my biggest problem with that. And I understand the focus is supposed to be Mel Hall. And Mel Hall is obviously the criminal here. But in detailing their quote unquote relationship, when it's not really, I mean, right, you shouldn't really call it that. The documentary says that Mel Hall moved into the girl's family's house and the girl's parents moved out of their bedroom so Mel Hall and the 15-year-old daughter could have the parents' bedroom. And then there's no follow-up with the parents. They interview this victim, and she has a lot to say about Mel Hall, and rightfully so. I needed to, what about your, do you play, what were your parents doing? What, do you have any blame? What's your relationship like with your parents? The mother and father moved out of their bedroom so this 15-year-old girl could sleep in their bedroom with Mel Hall. And the documentary doesn't give me any information on that.
I knew that they went deep into that because it was something that was like, you know, they promoted, oh, Mel Hall and his 15-year-old girlfriend, whatever it was.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, if you're going to do that, you got to do that, especially something as significant as that. You got to do that right.
Yeah. I mean, they did a good job covering how Mel Hall groomed her and how it all that. But then to sit there and say that he moved into the family's house and then not have any sort of follow up and what the, I don't know. To me, that was a huge hole that was hard for me to look past. And again, I get the focus supposed to be, you know, it's the craziness of the 90 Yankees and maybe that's, but that was too glaring to not readdress at some point in the doc. So, but yeah, if you're a Yankee fan, I would watch it for sure. Like it's an easy watch. What else did I want to get into? Oh, I thought of you with this. Did you see the New York Post put out a tweet before Game 7 of the Knicks-Pacers saying Knicks legends Marcus Camby and Latrell Sprewell are in the building?
Oh, I don't have a problem with those guys.
Really? I'm shocked by that.
Well, I mean, if it were Carmelo or Tyson Chandler, like they've dubbed them before, then yes. But Camby and Sprewell took them to a finals.
So you would consider them Knicks legends?
I mean, I don't have a problem with those guys.
Wow. I feel bad. I muted so many people who told me I was an idiot for because I said this is a completely agree. To me, I think Nick legend. I think Patrick Ewing, Bernard King, Clyde, Willis Reed.
Not even Marcus Camby.
For me, yes. I'd have no issues. And listen, I think Anthony Mason's more of a Nick legend than Marcus Camby and Latrell Sprewell.
Well, I'll give you the two
just
guys.
Just getting to the finals. Okay. I mean, that's how we're going to define it.
Well, I mean, so did Ewing. I mean, I you know,
legend to me is someone who was with the team for 10 years and produced for 10 years. That's a legend to me.
Well, I mean, they trot out Carmelo Anthony and Stephon Marbury as legends.
I mean, that's ridiculous.
Oh, look at Tim Thomas sitting in the legend seat. So I'm with you there. I wouldn't go nuts with Sprewell and Camby because they did at least get the Knicks to a final. They were that second part of the, you know, the 90s Knicks.
But I think to be a legend, you have to have significant time with the team at a high level. Like, for instance, there are people, I guess, who think Jim Leritz is a Yankee legend because he hit that home run.
Yeah.
That's not how I view it. To me, the Yankee legends are Jeter and Bernie and Pettit. Like,
right.
A body of work is what makes a legend, not a one-off.
You have to read this book, man. There's so much good shit in there on A-Rod and Jeter. And, oh, man, it's... You'll talk about Yankee legends. Yeah, I respect your high criteria for legends, but based on what they've done, there are guys I'd go nuts over and have gone nuts over. Camby and Sprewell aren't those guys.
I am shocked by this. All right, I'll take the L. I'll take the L. But, I mean, if Marcus Camby is a Knick legend, then Larry Johnson's got to be a Knick legend.
He is. He's there all the time. LJ's there all the time.
No, being there doesn't make you a legend.
Well, but I would 100% they would consider LJ a legend. Yes. I would say Larry Johnson over Sprewell and Camby. Like if you're asking me to rank them.
Well, that's my point.
Yeah.
And I don't consider him. The only Knick legend from my lifetime is probably Ewing.
Well, right. Walt Frazier. Not our lifetime.
Yeah, that's before.
Walt Frazier, Bernard King. And
Willis Reed. Yeah.
Yeah.
The Busher. Will you get into... Well, with the Knicks losing, how devastating is that from your radio show perspective?
No, it's not bad. They took us a long way. So, I mean, and also if Brunson were out, it would have been worthless anyway. I do have a quick story on that that you might like. Wow. So the last time the Knicks played a game seven at Madison Square Garden was 1995, almost 30 years ago. Ewing Fingerl. I remember where I was watching it. I remember feeling devastated. So something hit me Friday night after the Knicks lost game six to where I was like, I think I got to be there.
Oh, no.
I think I got to go to this game. So I'm looking up tickets. My wife is asleep Friday night. Now, you know, we're on a budget, you know, since moving into the new house and all that stuff. Tickets are not cheap, but I'm like, it felt to me, because I'm into this Knicks team, but it'll never be the same as it was in the 90s. Like, right. I love that team. But there was some symmetry here, being that it was the last time there was a Game 7 almost 30 years ago, and it was against the Pacers. I felt like, you know what, it'd be cool to be there and kind of like tie the two together. So I bought a ticket. $753.
No, you did not.
Hey, that's not even bad. Like, tickets are going for $1,500, maybe more. Section, it was in the 200s. Not bad. Like, otherwise,
what kind of budget are you on?
Well, not one that I could be spending $750 on a Knicks ticket. I'm telling my wife, hey, watch it. You bought too much food for the baby last week. And now I'm spending.
Oh, my God. He's going to starve the kids when you go see Nick Legend.
So, now, I buy the ticket. And I bought it through a secondary market, okay? Usually I don't do that, but I bought it through one of these sites. It's a prominent one, but I'm not going to mention it. I get the email saying, okay, congratulations, you're going to the event. The ticket will be sent to you by no later than 12:30 Sunday.
Whoa.
Red flag.
Whoa. Stop the phone.
Yeah.
Hold on. You got it? What? This was not StubHub, was it?
I do not want to disclose. I will tell you off the air. But
okay. So
it was a prominent site.
Because I have never heard of that. Because the only place I've ever bought tickets is either Ticketmaster or StubHub. And I've never experienced that. Anytime I've bought tickets, StubHub, you get the tickets immediately. Now, I bought tickets last week. I'll tell you that story. I think Ticketmaster, maybe they take a little bit of time. But StubHub, they get delivered. So I've never heard of this. So you order these on a Friday night, and they say Sunday at 12:30, and the game is Sunday at 3:30. That is ridiculous.
Okay. So you're like, I'm with you. I generally don't buy secondary market. I always go Ticketmaster when I can, or the verified resale Ticketmaster. It's fine. Never had an issue. I have bought from secondary stuff before. Never an issue. So when I got that email, it was a little, to a point where I didn't really even tell people. Like, I was going to tweet it out and be excited, but I didn't say anything because I'm like, something seems off here. But I thought I was going to the game. I bought a ticket. Okay, whatever.
You know when you get that feeling. You got that feeling.
So I did. Right away I had it. Sunday morning comes. All right. It's not 12:30. It's still no ticket. I'm messing around doing shit by the pool. My wife's like, do you know what time it is? Like, you got to, like, remember, the game starts at 3:30. It's now 1 o'clock.
Oh, my God.
And I'm still messing around with the pool. So I go inside to shower and get ready to go. I want to leave like 1:30, 1:45 and get into the city. Check my email. Still not there. Now I'm like, okay, something's up here. I email the place. I almost just said it. I email the ticket site. And I'm like, I still haven't got my tickets. Sir, the seller has 20 minutes deadline to give you. Do you want me to escalate? I go, yeah, escalate. Like, I got to go. I got to know if I'm leaving for the game or not.
Like, do you want me to escalate? Yes.
Yes, escalate. That's what this is for. Escalate it now. So I go, and they go, don't worry, we have a guarantee. I go, well, what's the ticket?
Can I ask you a question? This person you're in communication with, is this like a live thing, or you're emailing back and forth?
Digital text chat.
Okay.
Live chat through the
my fear is always that you're not getting someone live. Okay, so go ahead.
Yeah, so I got the live chat. Now, mind you, I'm literally, this is a true story, showering as we speak, trying to get ready with the phone on a ledge so I don't get that. Like, because I also don't want to lose the connection with this guy as he's escalating it, and I'm waiting to hear back from him. Finally, I get a response. You know, we talk to the people, whatever. You'll be receiving an email shortly. I'm like, well, what does that mean? He goes, you have to check your email. I check the email, and it says, unfortunately, the seller could not provide you with the ticket to this event. But don't worry, you can buy another ticket or get a full refund. That's their guarantee. Like, I could buy another ticket or get a full refund.
Let me ask you, if you bought another ticket hypothetically for $400, do they refund you the $300 difference?
I don't know, because at this particular point, first of all, when I looked at it real quick with the email, now remember, I'm like if I don't leave within the next 5 minutes, I can't go anyway.
Right.
So I'm not like sitting there, okay, well, I got time to look for another ticket. And the first graphic that popped up didn't look like many tickets were available. And I just had it with this particular place. And I said, fuck it. Give me my money back. Boom, refund. Then I went to Ticketmaster to look for a ticket. I found one that was a good value that was cheaper. And by the time I got my card together, that was gone. And then that was it. Every other ticket was either overpriced or way more than what I was.
But you got your money back.
I did get the money back. I mean, I got to just confirm. But yes, they said they were sending me the full refund.
Did you ever consider going and trying to like get it from a scalper at the Garden?
No, because I didn't want to go that bad. Like, truth be told, even Sunday, I'm like, shit, I got to go to the, you know. Now, I wanted to go, don't get me wrong. And I even did look last minute. But at that particular point, I wasn't going to force the issue and go right in and buy something last minute or wait for the prices to drop. But I could not believe that these ticket places can do that. If you buy a ticket, the ticket's got to be there. I never heard of this.
The only thing I would say is you got your money back. If you didn't, the whole time you're telling me this story, I was having anxiety that you weren't getting your money back. And I said, then I was thinking you wouldn't be this calm.
But that's not the point.
I agree. Again, I don't want to be like I told you so or know it all, but like I would only buy tickets from Ticketmaster or StubHub. I wouldn't buy tickets from anywhere else. I have that because that's my fear.
I told you I use a prominent secondary site. Did I not?
I can't believe StubHub would do that. I've never encountered that ever where the ticket is not
now.
Instantly. I'm surprised. I would have to look. I don't buy a ton of tickets, but that's shocking to me that you buy a ticket and you don't get it right away. It's shocking.
It should be unacceptable. Now, I told this story since to other people. One friend told me that he had that happen with TickPick before for WrestleMania in Philadelphia. Right. Another friend didn't give me a specific site, but he said it happened to him with an Elton John concert where like minute of, they were like, or not minute, you know, day of, hours before, like, oh, sorry, the tickets can't be available. And I'm like, so it's not just specific to one, I guess. I guess this is the thing, but how is that acceptable from any stretch?
No, I don't understand. So I bought tickets last week, not for me. I had to buy tickets for my niece. My cousin was taking her to a concert. The ticket was like $214. Excuse me. I keep coughing. I apologize to everyone listening. I have my allergies. The allergies have destroyed me, and I've got this post-nasal drip coughing issue. So I apologize for coughing into the mic. Please forgive me. So I buy this ticket. It's $214 for the ticket, and the fees are $84 or $82. What do we do? But I got the ticket immediately. Like, it was in my email the second I hit, and it was from StubHub. So, I don't know what to tell you on that. That's bizarre.
You buy a ticket. Like, a seller shouldn't be able to list the ticket without the ticket being there to be transferred immediately.
Right.
I don't know. I'll tell you this. I would never do that again. Now, imagine. It happened to work out okay because I was like, I was only going by myself, but imagine like you had a plan or you and I were going, or you're taking your family and you're excited and the kids are excited.
Right, right. Well, how about if you would have left your house thinking, okay, I'll get on the train and the email will come with the ticket, and then you can show up to the Garden and you have no ticket. Think about that.
Right, and you're in a spot where, and maybe that's how they get you, thinking that you want to go so badly, you're going to go to the game anyway, and then you just buy whatever the ticket is because you got to get in. Right. I was not in that spot, thankfully, but I never in all my years of buying tickets, I've never had that happen.
I'll tell you two quick stories off this because you just reminded me. I had dinner over the weekend with my oldest friend, my best friend from seventh grade. Like, we literally met in seventh grade. We're still friends. We went out to dinner Saturday night, and he was telling me, like, I have the worst memory of anyone in the world. I have no recollection of so many things. And he said, we were talking about the Knicks. And he said, oh, remember when we went to the Knick Pacer playoff game and bought the tickets from the scalpers and we got screwed? I'm like, no, I don't remember this at all. He's like, you don't? I'm like, I have no. He's like, so he said that we went to a Knicks Pacers playoff game. This is when we were in college. He was home from college. We went and bought two tickets from scalpers, get in the Garden, and we didn't realize our seats were nowhere near each other. We were in like two completely different sections. I'm like, I had zero recollection of the story. He's like, we didn't, I don't know if what happened. We didn't look at the ticket or we saw the set, or maybe we saw like the seats were not like, you know, we had seats like 11 and 12, but it was section 306 and three. Like, I had no recollection of that story. And then the other thing is I have a friend who, what he likes to do is he likes to buy the cheapest ticket possible to any event he goes to. It's usually concerts. Gets the last seat in the building, gets in there. Then he goes on StubHub. He sees what seats weren't sold and moves into those seats.
Wow, that's genius.
I thought you'd like that.
So does that work?
It works for him. But he's also psychotic. Like he has he stayed in like a men's room for like 8 hours at the MGM in Vegas once so he can sneak into a concert. He put on a full-blown security outfit and went to the Eras tour and acted like he was a security guard and got into the show. So
I'm pretty sure that's illegal.
Yes, it is.
What but the hell?
He was there shaking it off.
The ticket things are that's a brilliant idea, though. You just buy the cheapest seat and then see what's available, go sneak in and sit there. Don't make any bother.
But a lot of places I thought like you can't move down anymore.
Right. Like if you bought a ticket to the Garden, a 200 seat or 300 seat, you couldn't get access to the lower bowl.
I feel like all that changed with 9/11. Like before 9/11, you could move down anywhere in any building. Nobody cared. And then after that, everything was security, security, security. All right. The last thing I got to tell you is I don't know what is going on with me and the restaurants that I'm going to, but things are out of control. I told you last week how I got charged a fee for sanitary inspection.
Yeah.
Friday night, I go out to dinner. Manhattan. Totally overrated place. Arthur and Sons. And they charged me $3 for grated cheese to put on my pasta.
That's extra.
Exactly. What are we doing? I understand the restaurant business struggled, COVID. I get it. But don't give me these sneak charges. Put it all in my bill. I can't have the sneak charges. It's really a problem.
Yeah, you're right. They should just hide it in the whatever dish you ordered, jack it up a dollar or two, and account for the cheese. You're going to charge now for grated
but
cheese?
I have never encountered these two things in my life. A charge for the sanitary safety inspection.
Yeah.
And then a charge for grated Parmesan cheese. $3.
It's out of control. It's not just that. It's everything. Like I look at the cable bill and I'm like, I just don't get this. They get you every which way.
What annoys me is the two places that did this to me were like one-offs. If these were like places I go to regularly, then I could say, oh, I'm never going back. But I'm never going back anyway, so they screwed me and they got one over on me. All right, I just realized we got into the whole ticket thing. I need to know before we sign off here, what happened when you told your wife you spent $700 on a Knick ticket?
You want to hear how stupid I am?
Yes.
I gently broke the news to her Saturday while she was out doing her own thing. I was like, oh, by the way, I'm going to the Knick game tomorrow. I found tickets, you know, whatever. She's like, what?
Let me give you credit. That's a pro move because you bought the ticket Friday night. So you said to yourself, I'm not telling her now. I won't get a good night's sleep. Let me get a good night's sleep. Then I'll tell her on Saturday for the fight. All right. Go ahead.
And she handled it relatively well. I mean, I was complaining. I'm like, I'm drowning here. I need some time for myself. You know, and then so she's like, what? Is that going to be okay? Like, you're going to be happy with that? Is that something you want to do for yourself? And I was like, yeah, I think I want to go. I tried to explain it. She didn't ask anything about the price. And then she did, I think, when she got home. And I said, it's $600. Then stupid me.
Knocks $100 off the price.
$150. And then stupid me Sunday as we're watching the game by the TV. And I'm thinking, oh, all right, she's in a good mood. And we're talking about something else. I don't know what possessed me to do it, but I told her. I go, oh, by the way, it was $750. Like, because I'm trying to make it like, oh, we didn't spend the $600.
You're in the clear. Then you cause trouble for yourself.
I know. It was an idiotic rookie move. Again, I just couldn't help it because I'm trying to, again, like enhance the idea of, oh, I didn't go to the game. So we saved, you know, now it worked in reverse. If I'm going to the game, I want to spend less. But when we're getting the money back, I'm like, oh, we have an extra $750 to play with.
So you want points for ditching your wife and daughter and spending $750 on a Knick ticket and then the ticket place screws you and you want points.
Right. And I did not get them. That went worse than the I'm going to the game. When I told her that.
Right, because then you lied.
Yeah, I know. I said, hey, I just told you the truth. I didn't lie. No,
you're a mess.
I just told you. And I didn't have to tell you.
You're a goddamn mess. Yeah, I'm shocked. I was going to ditch you, spend $700, and then I lied. Oh, my God. Good thing you have Father's Day coming up in a couple of weeks. Maybe that'll...
Yeah, I need it.
Yeah. All right, Sal. Well, at least the Knicks are now they're out, so you don't have to buy any crazy tickets. You would have it's the Eastern Conference Final. I have to go.
Oh, now it's the Rangers.
It's the Eastern Conference Finals?
Rangers are in the Eastern Conference Finals and hopefully Stanley Cup Finals. But
is your plan to go to any of the games?
What's that?
Is your plan to go to any of the games?
It would honestly have to be. I wasn't even planning to go to Game 7. Like I told you, there was a lot of like nostalgia that was tied in there. It hadn't happened in 30 years. So I doubt that I'm going to go. They would have to fall into my lap at a reasonable price. And right now they're absurd. So no, probably not.
Can't wait to tape next week's segment.
I was in game one and game two.
Yeah, exactly. And I didn't tell my wife. All right, Sal. See you next week. Take it easy.
Talk to you later.
All right. All right, my many, many thanks to Kevin Harlan. Appreciate him doing that on a day of a game. Incredibly nice of Kevin to give me that kind of time. My thanks to Sal Licata, as always, for Train of Thoughts. My thanks to you for listening. Before we wrap up, just a reminder, make sure you're a subscriber to SI Media with Jimmy Trana. If this is your first time listening, hit that subscribe button. And if you missed any recent episodes, go into the archives, check them out. Mike North, the NFL VP of broadcast planning, was on the podcast last week to break down how he came to make the 2024 NFL schedule. Katie Nolan was on a couple of weeks ago. We broke down the Tom Brady roast. John O'Ran from Puck was on 3 weeks ago to go through the latest sports media news. So check those out. Subscribe to SI Media with Jimmy Trana and make sure you rate and review on Apple as well. All right, that wraps it up. We'll see you next week. Stay safe and take care.
Save big on all your back to school needs, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean ground beef for $3.99 a pound with your card. Then get Oreo cookies, Chips Ahoy, or Kool-Aid jammers for $1.99 each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.